Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. Brenda, why don't you tell me who you think of as your core family?
As my immediate family in my house is my 8-year-old daughter and myself. But two doors away, we have my parents, which is actually really pretty awesome. And then in the broader sense, I have my core group, my adoptive family of friends who, thanks to you, we all used to meet on the third Tuesday of every month. Same date, same place, same time. And get together and commiserate and complain and support each other through the waiting process. And my hope that I even wrote in a journal during that time was that it would eventually morph into a playgroup, and I won because it did. And I realized if you look back at our core group, the kids are all within a year of each other.
That's what's shocking to me. Yeah. I can't believe how close they are, considering how unpredictable adoption is. I can't believe all of those kids are within a year of each other.
Right? And it's just awesome that they get to grow up spending time around. I mean, we call them the core cousins, and they get to spend time around these other kids who have stories very similar to them. And like, I remember when we came to your baby shower when you were pregnant with Hannah, and Emma was upset that the baby wasn't there yet because I think it was the first baby shower that she'd had experience with where the baby wasn't there.
Yep. So you adopted as a single parent, and you chose to do that. And can you talk a little bit about what brought you to the route of adoption and why you chose to do that as a single parent?
So I have an incredible knack for spending an insane amount of time with the wrong men. And after the last relationship ended, I'd been with him like a year and a half, and I spent time dating and then realized I was sitting in first dates, evaluating their potential as fathers, which did not seem fair to them and did not feel right. Like, I didn't feel like I should be getting married just to become a mom. Like, you can get married at any age, but there's this narrow window of time to become a parent, it felt like. And so then I started thinking about, okay, if I'm going to do this on my own, how am I going to do it? And I work for a Catholic school, which narrows options somewhat because we have this fun little moral turpitude clause in our contract that basically says that we cannot publicly do anything outside or that goes against the church's teachings. So regardless of whether I would have had in-house support from my school administration, the broader administration would not have been okay with me pursuing a pregnancy being unmarried. And also doing a lot of praying and soul searching, I realized it didn't feel right to go through a pregnancy by myself. I don't know why. Part of it was just like the logical part of it of what would happen if I ended up on bed rest. I was the only person earning money. Those kind of things. But also the emotional part of, it's 2 a.m. and I feel something weird and there's nobody right there for me to roll over and wake up and say, hey, I need you to wake up and tell me this is okay. But I didn't know necessarily that adoption was actually an option. I thought I was going to have to do, I didn't know domestic adoption was an option. I had researched international. That didn't feel like my route. It felt a lot like baby buying. Because a lot of the international agencies, you know, have to give a gift to the orphanage or to the facility. And it just,
it just didn't feel like my route. I thought I was going to have to do foster to adopt. And then I went to a birthday party for a friend's child. And at the party, one of her friends had adopted two children through an agency in Northern Colorado that has since shut down. The owner just decided she wanted to retire. But anyway, that friend spent 2 hours at a birthday party walking me through what it would look like to adopt as a single parent, and knew for a fact that that agency would work with me because they had single parents on their roster already. And so I went ahead and pursued that option. And thankfully, my mom had a wedding fund that turned into our baby fund. So
thank you, Mom. Thank you. Yes. You're an only child. So your parents are, when you went towards adoption and really any sort of becoming a single parent, you knew they were part of that conversation, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we've got family members that either were adopted or did adopt. And so it wasn't this huge unknown thing for our family. And my parents had actually pursued adoption before my mom found out that she was pregnant with me. But they were military and the agency, they knew they would be moving within a year. And so the agency refused to work with them. Worked out well for me because then my mom got pregnant with me. But and so, yeah, and I don't even remember how that conversation went. I don't remember if it was just a, hey, by the way, I decided I'm going to do this, or if it was a, would you be okay if I did this? I just know that I always had their support and they were always in my corner. So, yeah, I walked through the agency's doors and had like a meet and greet with them and kind of went over the basics of what all it would look like. And they send you home with this packet and it's all these things that you need to get done before you can be considered paper pregnant. So there were background checks, there was fingerprinting. There were classes I had to take. There were
blood testing.
We have to do.
Do you remember that? I had to take an AIDS test and a TB test.
I might not have had to because I probably had to do that for teaching.
Oh, maybe you already had it. Yeah.
Because I don't remember having to do that, but I remember having to get fingerprinted again because that's already on file. I think I had to get fingerprinted to substitute teach. I had to get fingerprinted when I got hired at my school. So I think there's like three or four of my fingerprints on file now. I will never be able to lead a life of crime. And then there were classes that you had to take, and they gave you this checklist and you had to do all these things. And then you get to have the people come check out your house and make sure that your house is a safe environment, which I was nervous about that one because at the time I lived in a 900 square foot townhome and had two dogs and at least one cat. And so, yeah, they come check out your house and they ask you a ton of questions, which the nice thing is being single, I didn't get asked the invasive questions that married couples get asked. So I walked through their doors, I think it was July. It's either the very end of June or the very beginning of July. And I was officially approved in waiting by October. One of the classes that we had to take was a baby care class, which seems freaking ridiculous now that we're this far into the parenting journey. Like I could get them clean, don't drown them. That could have sufficed for the bathing the baby class. I needed the how to get through the 2.5-year-old stage and what to do when they're almost nine. You know, there's other things that could have covered. But anyway, so my caseworker had heard that one of the local hospitals had adoptive family friendly parenting classes. Wasn't going to be an issue for me since I had already made the decision that I wasn't going to pursue pregnancy, but it was nice for families who had dealt with infertility on their road to adoption to not have to sit in a room with other pregnant people. But in any case, so I looked up the schedule, and actually the day I looked it up, the class was offered like the next week. And so when I went to that class, got to talking to the instructor. Rebecca was amazing. and subbed her the Maybe We'll Adopt class. I don't personally take that one, but we did.
We did.
I was on the panel, and it was an amazing class for because it showed you all the different options for adoption and gave you all the information, and then you could sit down after and decide if that was something you felt like you could pursue.
Yeah, that was a huge decision maker for me and my husband because we were like, oh, we'll probably go international. And then we looked at the price of international and the risk of international and the almost certain much worse trauma of international. And we're like, yeah, well, we're not ready for that.
Right. Well, and my thing was I knew I got one shot at parenthood. And so I wanted to be there from as early as possible.
Right. Right. Not that there's not trauma from as early as possible, but we know that. We know that. And we can also, I mean, those first 2 years are pivotal in a child's life. And we want to be that pivotal point if that's possible.
And if I felt like I was going to be getting away from the trauma, it was, I wanted to be there for the memories.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that was my reason too. I wanted that infant in experience personally.
Right.
I wanted that personally, which is totally selfish, but the adoption world exists. So I used it.
Right.
You know, question for you, how, because adoption's not cheap. What was your plan to be able to afford this? Because you're a kindergarten teacher and you don't make
at a Catholic school.
At a Catholic school. You don't make a bazillion dollars, and adoption is not cheap. So how are you gonna do that?
A lot of prayer. So like I said, my mom had, because my mom is an incredible financial wizard, and she had started, I don't even know how young I was, she had started a savings account. I think it was a CD, I don't know. She always called it the wedding fund. And so then when I started to pursue adoption, it became the baby fund. And then I also was able to get a grant through Gift of Adoption that helped out a chunk. But realistically, it was a lot of this was my parents. I did some fundraising. I did some adoption garage sales where I just put out the word that, hey, I was going to be doing this garage sale. And if anybody had stuff, and I had a friend whose sister was moving and had me just come take a whole bunch of stuff that they didn't feel like moving. And so I had a lot of stuff that I could sell at the garage sale, and everything just went into the adoption fund. I think I used tax return money for the home study fees, that kind of thing. But my parents, in the end, after we did match and found out that the agency that we matched through was highly unethical, and so I'm not going to use their name, but I do private message people and say, you may not want to use this agency. But anyway, they raised the fees a ton after we matched, and then threatened to unmatch if I couldn't get them the money within the week. And so my parents took out a home equity loan to be able to pay the fees.
So just to give our listeners, all four of them, an understanding of the cost of adoption. So at the time when we were adopting around the same time, we were looking at a cost between, they were telling us between 20 and 40. And what did they tell you? Like your first agents, the first meeting, what was your understanding of what it would cost?
It depended on we ended up matched with. If I would have been matched through my agency with a child born in Colorado, they did a sliding scale based on your income. So it would have been a lot less money. Yes.
And when I say 20 to 40, what I mean is $20,000 to $40,000.
Right.
Dollars.
Yeah. So mine would have been, had I matched with a child born in Colorado, it could have been as low as, I think it was like 7 or 8,000. But they told me to plan for between 15 and 30.
Okay. And so then you matched because we were, I remember all of us were just, the waiting process in adoption is the most insane thing. It's like, here, since I've been pregnant, I will say it is like the last trimester of pregnancy. It's, you're due any day and you're stuck. I would say the waiting for adoption, you're stuck that week before your due date. And, but you can't force it. There's nothing you can do. And so you're just sitting there in total anticipation.
And they always say it happens when you least expect it. And when I took the baby class with Rebecca, she talked about keeping a journal when she was in the waiting process. And so I went home that day and started a journal. And I wrote in this journal all the time during the waiting process. And there's an entry, I think only like 4 months in, maybe 6 months in. 6 months would be on the long end, but it, like between 4 and 6 months in, where I wrote, I can no longer remember the person I was before I was the mom waiting for you. If you say 4 months, that's nothing. But when you're waiting and every day could be the day and then it's not the day and it's just, yeah, it's like dog years in reverse.
Yeah, it's such an uncomfortable feeling. And to not, to have done that without the group,
I don't know how people go through it without a support group of other people to...
that are also going through it.
Right. That understand it, because people who haven't gone through adoption just don't get it.
You get a couple of like close calls, right? Where
I call her my almost baby. Her name is Jaden, as far as I know. So it was almost a full year after I had started the process, because it was in either the end of May, the beginning of June. Went to visit a friend's baby in the hospital. I think he had RSV or something. And while I was there, she mentioned that their agency had this case that they didn't have anybody in agency that was interested. And it was a baby born situation. At that point, I think she was a little less than 2 weeks old. The birth mother had made an adoption plan from early on in her pregnancy, had a family chosen. There was some pretty significant birth trauma that happened, and the baby aspirated meconium, and they spent 5 minutes trying to get her intubated. And when the baby was 11 days old, the doctors went to the adoptive parents and said, based on these scans, we can't guarantee she won't have cerebral palsy. We can't say for sure that she will, but we can't guarantee that she won't. And the adoptive parents walked away from the situation. And this poor mother was now left with this baby that she wasn't, she didn't feel that she had been fit to parent a healthy baby at with her circumstances. And now to be faced with a potentially, a child with potential needs, there's no way she could parent that. And she'd already picked a family and now they've walked away. And so in any case, I contacted the agency and let them know that I would be interested in hearing more. And they sent over her medical records, which now I still wonder why that didn't violate HIPAA, but whatever. And I had two friends in the medical field that reviewed the records for me. And my one friend looked at the records and said, this baby is already doing more than she should be doing. And my thing was, she was 2 weeks old. And how do you determine somebody's entire life path when they're only 2 weeks old? My dad has MS. He's had it since I was 4 years old. And he's doing things at his age that he shouldn't be able to do. And so I know how amazing the brain is. And my friend said, I think this is your leap of faith moment. And so I called the agency back the next morning and let them know that I was all in. And at the point that they sent the records, they made it sound like if I said yes, that then this was going to be my child, because they didn't have anybody else interested. When I called back the next morning, it turned out that they had listed her on, there's a site called Special Angels, and they, I don't know if it's still operating because I believe the owner died, but They deal with situations of children with special medical needs, various forms. And they had listed this baby on the site, and they had over 100 families interested. And so I took my profile book down to the agency, and they met with the mother on Friday. And she went through a large pile of profile books and narrowed it down to 5. And I got an email Friday night that mine was one of the ones that she was taking home to look through over the weekend. And they would let me know on Monday. And I remember sitting in church on Sunday and looking at the floor next to me and thinking, I could be sitting here next week with a car seat next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And on Monday, I got the email that she had chosen to go with another family. And I was disappointed, but I wasn't heartbroken, because I just knew that that baby was ending up in the right home for her. And I knew what her mother had gone through to pick what she felt for the second time was the perfect family for this child. But because of Jaden, my agency realized you fill out your what you're okay with when you're in the very beginning stages. And then you take all these classes and you meet all these people, and your what you're okay with list kind of morphs and changes during the process. And it's not that you become desperate. It's that you realize there's a lot more that you could handle that you didn't think you could in the beginning. So in any case, my agency realized I was more open in my choices, and they connected me with the agency that I eventually matched through. I started branching out, and so I had joined the Special Angels group because they were all talking about me that day, and so then I joined it. So I belonged to Special Angels, and then I was the agency that shall not be named. I was receiving situations from them. I think there was another group that I belonged to. And so I was doing all this branching out on my own, and sending off profile books or interest letters, or I don't even remember what all else, to different situations. And when my daughter's situation came through, we were calling all of the situations that I applied to by the state that the baby was going to be born in.
Oh, I remember that.
And so, because then it was the Texas baby or the, you know, whatever baby. And so with my daughter, she was originally supposed to be born in Arizona. So we were calling her Arizona. And then it was the match that gives definition to plot twists, because they posted the situation. I remember reading it. I was sitting at my parents' house. I don't remember if I had gone there for dinner that night or what the deal was. This was before we lived 2 doors away from each other. And I read the situation aloud to my mom, and she said, yeah, go ahead and do that one. And then 2 or 3 weeks went by, and we got a notice from the agency that the birth mother had dropped off the radar. And then another 2 weeks goes by, and she came back to them, but now she was back in California. And so my mom had said, well, we can't, California, Arizona is too long to say. And somehow that morphed into the Calzone.
That's right.
And so we were referring to the baby as Calzone. And I remember telling you guys at a meeting that I couldn't explain it, but Calzone just felt right. Something about Calzone just felt right. And birth mom dropped off the radar again. I had to resubmit when she showed back up. And so I think I had originally submitted with them the beginning of August. And I was at your house on October, I believe it was 15th. Let me know for sure, because it's in my calendar, because October was a very important month for us. October 15th, and I got an email that literally started out saying, don't get too excited. Maybe it was a text. I don't remember. But it said, don't get too excited yet, but this expectant mother wants to talk to you. And I remember you made me finish my dinner, because I don't eat well under stress. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, oddly enough, I had already planned the day off. I was supposed to do a bunch of stuff with my house, ended up calling my dad. My dad came and sat in the house while the people came and did the bunch of stuff in the house. And I ran around like a crazy person doing all the things that the agency wanted me to do in case we actually matched. So I had to go get, I think I had to get re-fingerprinted. I had to get another background check. I had to go do all the things. And in the midst of that, then I had the phone call that was supposed to be with the mother. It wasn't. But the director of the agency that shall not be named, where I'm talking to her, and very casually something about, now that you're matched, I don't even remember how she said it. And I said, wait, what? Are you saying that she chose me? And she said, oh yeah, it was always you. She didn't want to see anybody else. And then she kept talking, and I cannot tell you what happened the rest of that phone call because I spent it crying. So that was on, trying to think of what day that was. I mean, I know it was the 16th, but I think it was like a Wednesday. And I think it was the following Monday when she contacted me and said something about this much money being due or something like that. And I had, when I had submitted for the situation the second time around, I had said, you know, we have a large chunk of the money. We don't have all of the money. And she's like, well, let's get you matched and then we'll figure out the rest. And I said, so we'd be able to do like a payment plan. And she says, yeah, we'll figure it out. And then not even a week later, she was, well, either get us the money or we're going to find somebody else for this baby.
Which, by the way, is highly illegal.
Right.
Even then, at the time, it was illegal. But you're in a position now, and they already have some of your money.
Right.
And it you're in a blackmail position.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The birth father made a comment that he thought there was, that his grandmother or his great-grandmother was all or part Cherokee, which then invokes ICWA.
I'm going to interject here because my dog kept barking during the recording, and this is a very important part of her story. The biological father claims that he is part Cherokee. By a law called the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, the adoption agency is required to contact the Cherokee tribe to, one, make sure the claim is true, and two, add the child to their tribe adoption list. This law is meant to help preserve Native American families, tribes, and cultures by regulating the adoption of Native American children. The tribes then have 6 months from the time the child is born to declare if they would like to adopt the baby. The extra kicker here is the biological father lives in California, so a California agency had to be brought on to handle the ICWA paperwork. Now, Brenda is working with three separate agencies. A Colorado agency, because in the state of Colorado, anyone intending to adopt must go through a local agency. Then she has the Arizona agency, which placed the expectant mother with Brenda. And now the California agency is involved to handle the ICWA paperwork. Brenda is now on the hook for paying all three of these agencies. And the Arizona agency is taking some extra measures that aren't quite ethical or possibly legal.
How much did you pay before baby was born?
I don't even remember.
Too much.
Too much, yes.
Right. Why didn't you go to the authorities, whoever that would be? Because there's no federal laws on adoption. Who would you have gone to?
Right. I didn't know. It felt wrong, but I didn't know who I would say anything to. And at that point, this was like the stick turning pink after you peed on it. This was my baby.
Right.
And right. To do anything that would jeopardize that just wasn't going to happen. So yeah, after we matched, we matched October 16th. The due date was supposed to be October 24th. Mom and I flew out to California October 26th, thinking we were going to get there just in time. And spent 2 weeks in California, which at the time didn't feel as amazing as it does now, because I was using up part of my maternity leave to be there. But having those 2 weeks to spend so much time with her birth mother and really get to know her and be there for doctor's appointments and all of that kind of stuff was amazing. But in the midst of those 2 weeks, we had, we were supposed to be induced, and then we got to the hospital and the head Medicare. Is Medicare the old people one?
I get them wrong every single time.
Whichever, the head doctor overruled it and refused to induce. And so there was a whole lot that happened. But in any case, I made them prove to me that the baby was okay, because at some point somebody made the comment that the measurements hadn't changed in 2 weeks. And so I thought they were saying that she wasn't growing. We got another ultrasound done. She was growing, but they changed the due date to December 4th. So as much as it killed us, we came home. I remember being in the airport with the stroller and the car seat and all the baby things and praying that that was not a premonition, that that was not foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. And looking at my mom and saying, the next time I do this, we'll have a baby, right? And she said, yes. So we came home, and I was home for a week when I got the call from her birth mom that she was on the way to the hospital and in labor. And I was throwing things in a suitcase. It felt rather at random. The baby suitcase was already packed because I shop. And so I had all the things already. So everybody kept saying, just buy it when you get there. And I said, screw that. I own all of it. It's going with me. And so ran around like a crazy person, got to the airport, got on the plane. When I called her birth mom to let her know I was on the plane, I could hear the baby crying in the background.
Oh my God.
The poor man sitting next to me, I was a flaming hot mess. I have run through an airport with my stuff to get to this flight. I have asthma. The inhaler was in my purse, which they made me put in the overhead bin. So I'm coughing, I'm sweating, and then the baby's crying, and her mom's like, no, that's Emma. And now I'm crying. And this poor man sitting next to me is like, oh my God, I got to sit through a 2-hour flight with this mess.
Okay, so before we go any further, what do you know what support birth mom had up until this point?
Very little, which is why she went back to California. The agency had her convinced, at least in her head, whether it was something she saw online or it was something they specifically told her, they flew her out to Arizona. Their preference is that their mothers deliver in Arizona for whatever reason. They flew her out there. She thought she was going to get to live in some type of like compound type thing. And it would be all these pregnant women who were placing their babies, and she would have this support group of people going through the same things. And she got there and they set her up in an apartment. She got there on like a Friday or a Saturday, I think she said. And on Tuesday, still nobody had come to see her or talk to her or visit with her or anything. And I think that was the first time she'd ever been on a plane. And they just kind of dumped her in this apartment. And she was calling birth dad every night crying. And finally on Wednesday, I think he said, this is ridiculous. I'm sending you money, buy a ticket and come home. And that was why she fell off their radar, because then she went home. And it took her a couple weeks to get her courage back up to reach back out to them again. But I don't know if that agency gave her any counseling. I know once we connected with the California agency, they were meeting with her as often as they could, that she had their phone numbers. They were helping to make sure things were getting paid for. And because I know at one point shortly after we matched, she called me to let me know that the Arizona agency had not paid. She was without a home at the time, so she was being put up in a hotel. And they hadn't paid her fee for the week. And the hotel was going to kick her out at 4:00 that afternoon if they didn't get their money. And she couldn't get a hold of the director of the agency. And I called the hotel directly and said, you will have your money. Do not kick her out. And I would have paid them myself at that point if I had to. I was able to get a hold of the director finally and get the money there.
But technically speaking, that is illegal for you to do that too.
Yes. Yes. Option. But how yes. do I justify letting her
I get it.
Kicked out and be on the street?
Right. Right. I get
no fault of her own.
You know, and also I want to get across to people that it's not that you, at this point, you're committed to that woman.
Right.
You're committed to this baby. And it's not like whatever I have to do to get this baby at this point. Once you've met the birth mother, now she's family. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. For me, that was the case. And I know for you, that was the case. This woman is now family and I will fight for her because it doesn't seem like anybody else is.
Right.
And so you're just trying to be her team player. So how?
And I knew all along that it was always her choice to choose to parent.
Right. That wasn't something you had to convince her to do.
Right.
You didn't have to convince her to place with you. You're not, it's not your job to say, you know, you have to give this baby to me. That's, you're not convincing her by paying for her hotel room. You choose, you want this woman to live, to not be homeless. You want this woman to.
Right.
And that's what the agency promises too.
Yes.
Why are you paying all this money to an agency who is not taking care of this person that has committed to do, I don't know. It's the whole thing's all messed up to me. Anyway,
yes.
I have opinions. So let's move along. I know too much. To you get to the hospital. Now what?
When she was born?
Yep.
So I got to the hospital 4 hours after she was born. And I walked in the door and her birth mother had had a previous delivery where she had hemorrhaged after the delivery. And so I was very concerned for her, for this process.
For the birth mother.
For the birth mother. And so I walked in the room and I walked up to her and I gave her a hug and I was, how are you? Are you doing okay? And I probably spent at least 3 minutes. And she finally looked at me and she said, I'm going to cry just saying it. Don't you want to go see your daughter? And because she was upset that I was focusing on her, she thought, but how do I not focus on her? Like you said, she's family.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I went and held her for the first time and cried all over her and promised I would not always cry on her. Just, you know, on rather frequent intervals. So yeah, then... And she chose, so the hospital policy was that she could have one person stay in the room with her. And she really wanted it to be birth dad. And I was fine with that. And my mom had gotten us a hotel room that was like 5 minutes from the hospital. And so the hospital itself was not very adoption friendly either. Birth mom had to push super hard for them to give me a hospital band so that I could go wherever the baby went. They did not see the need for that. So I actually didn't get to go with her when she got bathed for the first time. I had left the room to go to the bathroom and I came back and they had taken the baby. And because birth mom was still in the room, I could not go into where she was. And that night when we were leaving to go to our hotel room, the nurse at the nurse's station, as I was saying goodnight, giving my number, if anything happens, just give me a call. And she said, are you seriously leaving those people with your baby? And I said, well,
what option do I have?
Well, not only that, but at that point, she was still their baby.
Like, right. Not my baby.
Right. Yeah. I don't know why, but I think from the moment that her birth mom called me when she was in labor, I had this incredible sense of peace that this adoption was going to go through because she didn't have to call me.
Yeah.
She could have gone and had the baby and I would have been none the wiser, but she chose to call me. And so to me, that was my sign that she was committed to this.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my mom almost killed me because then on day of discharge, and I had seen this in a blog or something somewhere. This was not completely my idea. But when we knew we were all going to be discharged, and I told her birth mom, I said, we're going to go take a walk. We'll be back in about a half hour. You and birth dad have this time to say whatever you need to say to the baby, to do whatever you need to do to be ready for discharge. And my mom didn't tell me at the time, but later she was like, I almost killed you. All I could do was they were going to walk out of that hospital with that baby.
Like, and ultimately, that's their choice.
It would have been their choice.
And you can tell an adoptive parent or expecting adoptive parent that all day long that you don't have the choice. And it's so hard. It's so hard to be on the opposite side of that. But once you meet that family, that person who is handing you their heart,
right,
you will do anything.
And it's we will never, ever, ever, ever receive a gift as amazing as that.
And what they go through afterwards, after making this choice too, is, it's unbelievable.
Right.
I actually talked to a birth mother yesterday. I did an interview with somebody and we talked about that hospital stay, and she was, it was the hardest day of my life. And she said, I regret nothing. It's the hardest day of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's just, she also had created a bond with the adoptive family. And I think that's so necessary, because you look at these children that are being adopted, and they didn't choose to be born, okay? The children didn't choose anything. I chose to be an adoptive parent, and that the birth mother chose to place their child for adoption. In an infant adoption situation, that's how it works. The children aren't taken away. The state's not taking the baby. You are choosing to place your child with another family, and another family is choosing to take on the role as adoptive family. That baby has no choice.
Right.
No choice whatsoever. So when those two parts, the adoptive family and the birth family, when they don't connect and get along and choose to be on the same team, and that's team baby, it's not going to go well.
No.
It's just not gonna go well. And there's not always, I think I have a kind of a Goldilocks situation with both of my kids, but you start the whole relationship right. And I think you've done a fantastic job of doing your very best for the birth family and representing your daughter. Say, I'm her representative until she can speak for herself. And I choose to be a part of your life if I can be.
Right.
And I choose to keep this relationship open if you allow it. Because that's our job, is that we're the representative of our children until they are old enough to speak up for themselves.
Right. Well, and I don't know about you, but discharge day was the worst, best day.
Yes. I cried both times. Cried my eyes out. It wasn't for me.
I literally, because her birth mom was very, very... She had her heart set on all of us being discharged at the same time. She didn't want the baby to be at the hospital without her, and she didn't want to be at the hospital without the baby. And so the day of discharge, I spent a lot of time talking to anybody that even looked like they might remotely work at that hospital to ensure that we were all getting discharged at the same time. And she was born in this hospital that has the stupidest parking setup ever. And it was undergoing construction. And so they have like this drop-off zone right outside labor and delivery and the maternity area, but there was no parking. And so the parking was like a 5 to 7 minute walk away. So when we got discharged, birth mom was in the wheelchair holding the baby. I'm carrying the stuff. And her birth mom finally looked at me, it's going to make me cry again, and said, I need you to stop crying. She said, hey, I'm not crying. I'm happy. I know this is the best choice for her, and I know what a good life she's going to have. So you need to stop crying and you need to be happy.
Oh my God. Because she wasn't experienced. She was sad. And she wanted was you to see you experience the greatest gift of your life.
Right.
But you were also...
My heart was breaking for her.
Yep. Yep.
Even though I had done everything legally, it still felt like I was taking her child from her.
Yep.
I felt that every time.
But when somebody says something like that to you, how do you not love them? How do you not have them as family for the rest of your life?
Right. Right. Also, they are connected forever to your child.
Right.
They are half of your child. And to ignore that piece of your child is to not fully know your child.
Right. How do you ignore a large chunk of who your child is?
I really think it's important for people to hear this, even if it's four people. What an emotional ride that you went on. And that as adoptive parents, we're not the bad guys. And people who place their children for adoption are not the bad guys.
Well, remember I posted a while back, I think I posted every year, but it was a meme or something that said, given life, given love, never given up. She was placed.
She was placed. Never say give up for adoption. They're never given up. And one thing I remember telling my daughter's birth mom, I said, I'm not going to say goodbye to you because I'm going to see you later. So I gave her a hug and I said, I'll see you later. And she just cried. I mean, she had a friend who had recently placed their child and she never saw that baby again. And I said, that's not our situation. I'll see you later. And I meant it and I followed through with that.
Yep.
And it's not always easy.
No.
It's not always easy to be in a relationship with people that are not like you at all. Like, our commonality is our child. And when I say our child, I mean our child.
Right. How crazy is that?
Oh my gosh. How was those first few weeks? I mean, I remember. I came to visit quite often.
Yeah. Well, when you adopt out of state, you have to deal with ICPC, which is fancy term for, we're going to make sure that you're not kidnapping this child. And so the state that you're in has to agree to let you leave. And the state that you're trying to go to has to agree to let you in. And her birthday is the week before Thanksgiving. And so they were desperately trying. The California agency was desperately trying to get us, and Colorado, trying to get us home in time for Thanksgiving. And then Colorado ICPC contacted my Colorado agency and said, we have some questions about these fees that this Arizona agency is charging. And they wanted some additional paperwork that basically was going to justify that the Arizona agency had to justify their fees to Colorado. Mm-hmm. And my caseworker contacted me. I got a hold of the director. And it was the Wednesday right before Thanksgiving. And I contacted her at like 1 o'clock her time. And had she gotten on it, Colorado would have signed off. We could have gone home Wednesday. And she didn't go into the office until like 4:30, 5 o'clock. So by the time she sent the paperwork, the Colorado office was already closed. So then, and because we fly standby, then we were there until the following week. But we were at the hotel for a few days after she was born. And then we went to stay with a family friend who lives in California and who at the time had these two crazy dogs who fought over the baby. And so I literally could not put the baby down. I think being out there for those 2 weeks before she was born, because she heard my voice so much of the time, we even had in hospital, we had nurses commenting on how connected the baby already was to me. And I think it was the day after she was born. I think her birth mom called me at 7 o'clock in the morning and said, are you guys on your way yet? Because she's crying and I can't get her to stop. I think she just wants you. I got lucky in that respect because we kind of had that connection and bond early on. But yeah, so yeah, then coming home and we spent about 4 or 5 days at my parents' house so that my dad could spend some time with her before we came home. And then just kind of got into being calm and realizing why people with newborns never get anywhere before 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Why people with 9-year-olds still don't get anywhere before 11 o'clock.
Right?
What has your experience been with single parenting since then? Is it everything you expected it would be?
Yes.
Has your community stepped up in the way that you hoped they would?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think I underestimated the worry. Like, I knew the neat part of it of, like, when she wakes up in the morning, it's me she's looking for. Or when, you know, when she was little, or even now, when she gets hurt, it's me that she wants, even if my parents are around, that kind of thing. If she's scared, it's me that she wants. But I underestimated the worry that you have as a single parent, because there's nobody else to share that with. I mean, there's my parents, but, you know, like, there's been times she's gotten sick at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, I'm not going to call my parents and wake them up, you know, and to not have somebody in house, that makes it a little more difficult. I don't know how single parents do it with more than one child. I have one, and I still rely on my parents a lot to pick her up from school sometimes, or pick her up from activities, or get her places, or that kind of thing. I don't know how people with more than one kid do it.
How can you give yourself more grace? What are some things that you're hard on yourself about?
Feeling like I need to do it all right, not just for me, but also for her birth mom.
Yeah, I get
feeling
that.
Like, yeah, like,
oh, her, the best child.
We were entrusted with this gift. And so now it's not just like, I don't want to screw it up for me, but I don't want to screw it up for her either.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
for her birth mom. Yeah, your child is going to literally have the best childhood ever. But you want to make sure that you're doing right by her birth mom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she chose me for this amazing human.
Right. Right.
And, like, it's a gift I'll never be able to repay.
Right. But you know you're doing it. Like, you're doing it, Brenda.
Right.
You're doing it. I mean, give yourself grace in that I see that you're doing it, and I don't see you very often, but I know that you're doing it. And that girl has more love than so many kids that I do know. And you spend so much of your time giving everything you have to her. And that is, I see it. All of the people around you see it. You're doing it. So give yourself grace. Like, you are doing it, Brenda.
Thank you. Some days it doesn't feel like it. Some days it feels like we're on the hamster wheel, you know?
Most days it feels like I'm on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, that, there's that. Yes.
At least there's glitter on it, maybe.
Right.
Any final words?
I guess just to any single folks out there who are debating whether this is even doable, I would say, if you can't picture your life without being a parent, then find your tribe, find your people, and find a way to make it happen. Domestic infant may not be your route, but my thing was, if I was 85 years old and on my deathbed, I could be okay with the fact that I never got married. I was not going to be okay with the fact that I never got to be a mom.
Yeah. You just definitely, you were born to be a mom. I can tell you that right now.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for interviewing with me. I'm so glad
you
figured it out finally.
Finally. Just like helicopters and barking dogs
and crazy bird situation. What was that? We can't record. I can mute that out. Why do I have tears in my eyes? My God, Brenda.
It's dusty out there. I can see it.
Dusty. So clean.
Thanks for listening to my interview with Brenda Herbrand. I will always remember the days when we were waiting to adopt together, and I'm so glad that she's still in my life. I'll take much of what we had talked about and put it in our show notes today. Thanks for hanging in there through the crickets and the dogs and the birds and the bangs and the pops and the, oh, how frustrating. I'm still new at this, but I'm getting better. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Grace Podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. And as a reminder, I am not a parenting expert, and neither are my guests. Don't forget to give yourself and others just a little bit of grace today.